All right, welcome back, one and all. Hopefully you have fared well with the through Irma, through the hurricane, through the ups and downs. I know personally it could have been a lot worse, could have been a lot better, but you know, it's very thankful that house is still standing, got power back after, you know, a couple days, not too bad. I know some people might still be without. They're trying their hardest. I know it gets very frustrating very quickly. But that is not why you're here. You're here to be informed, entertained, as it were. This is the Radio St. Pete exclusive Asian Cult Cinema. My name's Mal. We're doing a solo show this week. I don't know if you remember many, many months ago, I did, it was a solo show, I did Kill Bill Volume 1, and I was like, next week I'm going to do Volume 2, and that was months and months ago. So yes, much like Grindhouse movies, you can't always depend on what you hear. But anyway, yes, that's what we'll be talking about, Kill Bill Volume 2. So if you hate these movies beyond belief, then I guess, sorry, hopefully next week's shows will be better for you. But now this was Kill Bill Volume 2, for the, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows this, but, you know, might as well go over the story again. This was going to be released as one long movie. It was going to be Kill Bill, a revenge flick, you know, in the martial arts spirit, you know, this is a martial arts movie. And it was kind of just going to be like a woman getting her revenge, fighting her way through the various opponents until she kills her nemesis. Or gets killed by her nemesis. Who knows? But it, I guess it was close to 4 hours long, or just over 4 hours long, and everyone was like, no, that's not going to happen. Now, I know I just saw Hateful Eight a year ago, whatever it was now, and that was 3 hours and 7 minutes. I went to see the Road Show, where he had the intermission and all that kind of stuff. So Tarantino is definitely not shy about doing a little bit longer of a movie, or, you know, letting things simmer, as it were. But in this case, I think it was the correct decision to cut it up. I know they did re-edit it in The Whole Bloody Affair, was the name of the movie, where they kind of put it all together in one. But it was a very limited engagement. They showed it a few places, and then for some reason never came out on DVD, never got shown anywhere, which is sad, because I think there's definitely a built-in audience. I know I would love to see it in the theater, and I'd love to see it, have it in my collection, but that's just the way life is now. A lot of things are just inaccessible, and that's like helps the cool factor or something. I'm not sure why it's done, but it's done. So, The Whole Bloody Affair, it would definitely have been much different edited. It would have been edited down quite differently than it is in one and two parts. So, you know, good stuff. I liked, one of the things that was opened up then with two parts was, oh, which was better? Was one better? Was two better? Because Kill Bill 1, Volume 1 came out in 2003. Kill Bill Volume 2 was, because it was filmed the same time, so it came out in 2004. This was definitely a phenomenon. This was definitely like a huge movie when it came out, both of them. It was very influential. It was very well received, I think. For the most part, it was one of those, wow, this is a great movie. And I was swept up in Kill Bill fever like crazy. I loved it. You know, I love this movie. I can literally go line for line. I can say the lines with the same diction as they're being said on screen, which is annoying for all those around me, so I try not to do that. But you know, so I never really bought into the, oh, one was better than two, this and that and the other thing. I mean, I think generally speaking, one had a lot more action, where two developed the story a bit better. You know, it showed us the background, the massacre at Two Pines, and then it went into the training with Pai Mei, stuff like that. So those, generally speaking, would be a bit more slow-paced. You're getting more information, less, wow, look at kicks and punches and you know, crazy 88s and all that kind of stuff. Not to say that there wasn't any exposition and there wasn't any story, of course, in one. This is just, Volume 2 had a lot more of the in-depth background, you know, showed you more of who these people were. Not the ones that are dead, of course. Well, I guess in some cases they were, yeah. So, overall, I thought very highly of both 1 and 2. You know, I was, and I said, I never bought into the which is better. Now, this was built out as an homage to, to the martial arts stuff. And I know there's a lot of criticism, myself included, over the years. I've criticized quite a bit that a lot of this is homaged to death. It's been stolen, outright stolen from places. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is, kind of. It's not like it's a... he never claimed to be, oh, this is all brand new stuff, you know. So, like I said, the first Chapter 6, which is the first chapter in Kill Bill Volume 2, is Massacre at the Two Pines. This flashes back 4 years earlier when they're... It's during a wedding rehearsal. Beatrix and Tommy Plimpton, which is the groom-to-be, along with some friends and family, they're deciding the details of the wedding, and Beatrix is very pregnant. She takes a break and she finds Bill sitting out front, and he's playing one of the kung fu flute, you know, that really long bamboo flute. And you know, they kind of talk a little bit, and they're kind of... Bill is there to try to figure out why she left, why he's... Because she just left without any, without giving a reason. And he found her. He was running an assassin's hit squad of all females. And, and Bud. But, you know, so she just left. And then he finds out she's shacked up with some guy in some dusty old Texas town where she's running a record store. Or, you know, they have a record store together. And he's literally kind of like, I'm a little surprised, you know, that you just left. He doesn't know, although while she's pregnant, he still doesn't know that it's her baby, that it's his baby. That was, of course, shown right at the end when he shot her in the head. This is going back to the first one. A lot of Tarantino's stuff jumps around quite a bit. You have to really kind of say, now, when was this? Where was this? You know. And that's part of it. That's part of the charm, I'll say. That's part of what he does that makes it a Tarantino movie. You know, chapters and jumping all around and broken up timelines and stuff like that. So this was a really good scene. This was set well. This was a very dusty, tiny little chapel. Been there for years and years and years. You could tell the wood was faded, the dirt. There was practically tumbleweeds going across. Might have actually been. I can't tell you. This was the nod to the spaghetti westerns, because that was part of the whole formula for this one as well. So Bill, she introduces Bill as her dad to her soon-to-be husband, we think. And he sits down on the bride's side. You know, Bill does. He's like, okay. You know, they have some pleasantries. Bill plays it up very well. And that's it. Then the as he sits down, Tommy walks away, you know, they kiss, and then enter the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad, and they kill everyone that's there, which was part of this lore of the, you know, the Massacre of Two Pines, which they talked about in the first one, how it was this huge, you know, lore. And so yeah, there you go. There's the beginning of this movie was the flashing back to the actual event. You know, Bill being who he is, which is a very tough, rough, you know, hateful guy. So, and that sets the tone, and it was, I think, a perfect way to start Kill Bill 2. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's on to the rest of this wonderful movie.
Kid shouldn't play so rough. Somebody's gonna start crying.
Prince of Darkness, hear me.
They call him Luther the Berserk, but his blood brother is called Lucifer.
I command you to appear.
Their form is human, but they have crossed over. spawn of the devil, master of black arts.
It's been 50 years since a man looked at me like that.
Where the weird rites of the supernatural sensualists defy description, no one is safe when the witchmaker walks a trail of terror. Are you ready to meet the witchmaker?
It's your old pal Krusty for my new pork sandwich, the Clogger. If you can find a greasier sandwich, you're in Mexico.
All right. Now, after that opening shot, now we see the chapter 7, The Lonely Grave of Paula Schultz. So, basically, Beatrix attempts to assassinate Bud. Now, Bud is, of course, Bill's brother. Played by Michael Madsen, which is he does some great performances in Reservoir Dogs and in Kill Bill, but doesn't, I don't know, some of the ones I've seen, some of the movies I've seen him in, he doesn't show up, but that's okay. But I mean, whatever, he is who he is, and but he really shines in these. They're well written for his character, and Tarantino knows how to get a lot out of him. So he plays Bill's brother, who is not doing quite as well. You know, he's living in a beat-up old trailer in dusty old Texas, you know. But he knows from some of the other assassination attempts. And remember, Bill, at the end of Kill Bill 1, Bill kind of shows up and says, I hope you've been practicing your sword work, because she's coming for us all. And he had said something to the effect of, well, that girl deserved her revenge, and we deserve our comeuppance. And he told Bill that he didn't have the sword anymore, that he pawned it, which turns out to be fake, which is an odd twist, but doesn't matter. So he knows that she's coming. So this whole time he prepares for her. She sneaks up on the trailer, and she hears a record playing, and he's in a rocking chair, and he stops, and she like hides, and he looks out. It's kind of a neat, interesting cat and mouse kind of thing. So she hears the record going again, and she kicks the door open, and she gets blasted in the chest with a shotgun full of rock salt. So she's laying in the dirt. She gets blown right off the, you know, off the steps of the trailer. She's laying in the ground, screaming, and he's like, that's rock salt, and he injects her with something to knock her out. So he ties her up, and then him and a weird buddy of his, you know, go to bury her. So he puts her in the coffin, and she's kicking around and fighting him, and he puts mace to her eye, and he's like, I'm gonna put you in the ground, and you're either gonna be blind, or you can do this normal. So she stops fighting with him. And this was one of those sequences in theater that it's to this day, it sends chills through my spine. In the theater, he throws her into this wooden coffin. And they dig up, you hear him digging up, he's digging the hole over the Paula Schultz's grave. He puts her in a pine box. He gives her a flashlight, and I forget what else he gave her. I think it was just a flashlight. And he basically says, well, you know, now you're dead. And she puts the lid over top of the coffin, and you're sitting in an incredibly dark theater, and you're hearing the nails being driven into the wood as it's kind of like, it's so weird. Like you're being buried with her. That's what it feels like when you're sitting in the studio or in the theater. And it was very effective. I think that gets lost when you're watching it at home on Blu-ray or whatever. You're not some like totally dark, and you're being buried with her. So now you hear the wood kind of crunching down as the dirt's getting thrown on top, and she's it freaks you out. So then he like leaves. You know, now she's sitting there, and he has the flashlight underneath her face, and she's buried, and he leaves. And now she's there, and now it flashes forward to chapter 8, which was the cruel tutelage of Pai Mei. And Pai Mei is played by Gordon Liu, and it shows her in the beginning of her joining the hit squad. Bill drops him off drops her off and is like, well, he hates white people, he hates women, you know, you're really in some trouble. But this is part of their, all the assassination, all the hit squad goes through this training with Pai Mei. And Bill went through it, of course, years and years ago. There's a lot of deep backstory. Some was revealed with Sonny Chiba, how Bill did the sword work with him. Now he trained with Pai Mei for his learning how to do the great white lotus ninja Pai Mei, you know. So his tactics are incredibly cruel, and he's incredibly vicious to her, but that's part of making you an assassination, you know, an assassin. So it shows a lot of montages with him just beating on her, and he's teaching her the one-inch punch. Store that in your back pocket. She's showing her how to do the one-inch punch, and he's, along with all this other stuff. This doesn't come easy. This is a lot of montage, a lot of very cruel things. He also alludes to the five-finger death touch, which stops hearts. So this is all building, though. You know, she's showing that she's tough, but he's easily defeating her. And you know, she lunges at him with a sword, and he stands on the edge of the blade and then kicks her in the face. You know, she can't use chopsticks, so he throws her food on the ground like a dog and stuff like that. So it's, but it's over time he's growing to like her, not like her, but you know, he accepting her as a student, and she's working really hard. And then it kind of goes to that, the thing where she's practicing the one inch punch, which is a real thing, she's working on it over and over and over again, because he's like, well, what if the person's really close to you? You need this tactic. And it shows her working on it, working on it, working on it. And then finally she does it. And that's when you flash forward to her, because she had gotten, when she was buried, she got a razor out of her boot, cut her the ropes, and she's sitting there with the flashlight under her. That's right before they went to the Pai Mei. So now you learn how she gets out of here, because now it flashes right back and she does the one-inch punch, and she just punches straight through the coffin, like up through the ground, which is really cool. You know, so she gets out, and then they show her, she comes walking out of the desert to this little tiny diner and just sits down, and she's covered in dirt. She looks like she's been buried in dirt, you know, and that she's dead, and she orders a glass of water. And that's kind of that wraps up that whole thing. It was interesting, and it was really neat to tie together that way, because a lot of movies that don't feel like they're that don't feel complete, or don't feel like like it's going anywhere, is because there's none of this strife. You know, she went through a lot in the beginning, and that could have been enough for the whole script, but it wasn't, because if she would have just ripped through everyone and killed everyone, well, what does that do? Nothing. I mean, yes, it's satisfying as far as an action movie, but if you want to see that, go watch an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie or something like that, where she's continually getting hurt, getting beat down, and continually rising up again, which makes it all that more exciting for you, all that more like rooting for her, and you want her to win. You want her to beat this horrible group that put her through this trials and tribulations. So, in that sense, and also it is a super homage, because this Pai Mei is that typical white long beard, white overgrown owl eyebrows. If you love kung fu movies like I love kung fu movies, you've seen this character a million times. The white robe has a weird, like a cackling laugh. No one can even touch him. You know, he is a god among men kind of thing. So the Pai Mei character in this movie really made a lot of sense, and it really tied together her escape, her background, why, how she's so tough, you know. So overall, up to this point, really well written and great. Plus, you got to see this weird strip club, which was just gross and kind of hilarious.
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Is there someone else up there we can talk to?
No, now go away or I shall taunt you a second time.
Tonight, the world's most horrible combination of the decade, showing in blood-curdling color.
See, a most diabolical story of sacrifices to a non-human creature in Brides of Blood, starring John Ashley.
The second unbelievable terror will scare the pure-living yell out of you when you see Christopher Lee in Blood Fiend. A pre-engagement ring set will be given to the girls who attend tonight. It's ashes to ashes, dust to dust. If the Brides of Blood don't get you, the Blood Fiend must.
So, will we see you tonight? Good.
You're not just telling us what we want to hear.
No, sir, no way.
Because we just want to hear the truth.
Well, then I guess I am telling you what you want to hear.
Boy, didn't we just tell you not to do that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then.
All right, so now we pick up with Ellie Driver, played by Daryl Hannah. She's, because Bud, by getting rid of Beatrix, they think, now he has her sword, which was the last sword made by the famous Hattori Hanzo. He swore he would never make a sword again, and to fulfill his obligations to rid the earth of Bill, he made Beatrix a Hattori Hanzo sword. Ellie Driver had never had one, so she was obviously going to buy it. And seeing the squalor conditions that Bud lives in, and that he works in this horrible strip club, and just as he needs money to live, and you know, because he's undependable, the owner like was taking shifts away from him, so he's really that like poor. So getting this sword is a windfall. Believe it's $1 million he sells it to her for, or he sets up to it's a briefcase full of money. So now Ellie Driver shows up in a very cool car with a big bag of money, and he's selling, and she's looking at the sword, and Ellie, they go into an interesting speech where Ellie's like, is this better than this one, and better than yours, or better than whatever, and Bud is kind of like, you know, you don't compare Hattori Hanzo swords, you know, they're either you have one or you don't. If you have one, they're not compared. They're all the greatest thing ever made. Kind of building the myth, building the whole thing. They don't know Beatrix is still alive. The bride is still alive. So she puts down the money. And he's like, is that my money? And he's like, yes. And he's like, okay, well, then that's your sword. And this whole scene, he's using a blender to make, like, margaritas, kind of. But it's just the sloppiest, grossest. Where he's living is so disgusting. You're like, ugh. It adds to that whole thing. He starts counting the money as she's sitting there. And a black mamba snake, which was her, I believe that was her, nickname, yeah. Shoots out of the money and bites him and Bud is dying. It's a very venomous snake, and it shoots out and bites him, and he's dying, and she's like, oh, you know, she starts reading this like thing, you know, it's kind of become cliche and people like laugh about it, but Tarantino always writes a lot of oddities or like long speeches and stuff like that into his movies. They're always entertaining, and they always do help add to the either to levity or add to something, but it's almost a lot of people, you know, even say like Tarantino'd scripts, you know, like if you have some crappy action movie and they start going into some weird dialogue, you're like, oh well, somebody watched a Tarantino movie before they wrote this script, you know. So she's reading this thing and he's dying, and he finally expires, and she picks up the money, and then she goes to leave with the sword and the money, you know, and she calls Bill and's like, oh, your brother's dead. Yeah, looks like, you know, Beatrix got her. And he's like, oh, that's sad, you know, so come back home. And she opens the door, and there's the bride. And they have this long, crazy fight. Parts of it are very disgusting. Where she, you know, they're fighting in Bud's trailer. So they're knocking down walls and falling into very disgusting toilets. And that's when, you know, because now L Driver has Beatrix's sword. So she goes, she starts fighting her, and she goes to the there's a golf bag, a golf club bag, and in it she finds his Hattori Hanzo sword, which, you know, even says to the only man I've ever loved, Bit Love Bill. You know, it was on the inscription on the sword, and it was one of those odd things where you're like, why did he lie about pawning the sword? Was it must have just been to get under Bill's skin, because, or he went back and got it from the pawn shop, one or the other. Doesn't really matter, but it was just one of those things where it was an interesting twist that he told Bill one thing but then didn't. So then now they're just having this sword fight, and Ella reveals she has an eye patch the whole time, and she reveals that Pai Mei took her eye, but then she murdered him, and she's like, "That's right, I murdered your master." So then she kills him. Or she finally kills... Or no, she doesn't kill Elle. She just takes her other eye out and steps on it, which was like, oh, I didn't need that. And she's screaming around, and the snake is still in the... presumably in the trailer. And Belle leaves... and then she leaves. The bride leaves. So now the bride is traveling in a little Carmen Ghia-style car, and she pulls up to a small hut, like a brothel run by a... by who she refers to as a father figure for Bill, which Esteban Vallejo. And after some discussion back and forth, he's played by Michael Parks. Michael Parks played Esteban, and he also played the cop in the first one. Dual role, very, very good actor. He just passed away recently, which was sad. So now he finally says where is Bill's the villa that Bill's there, lives in, and she shows up with a gun and a sword to kill. She's finally gonna kill Bill. This was the culmination of this entire journey. Boom, comes in and finds Bill. She comes through the door to kill Bill. Finally, here it is, and she finds Bill playing with their daughter, whom she did not know was still alive. And obviously she's in shock, but she's very quick on her feet, and they kind of have some tender moments. She pretends like they shoot her, and then she pretends to die, and then she reads him a story, and then the kid goes to sleep. Now she's kind of overwhelmed, and at this point you don't know how this is going to go, because now this is the family unit. This is the mother, the father, and the child all together. She didn't know the daughter was alive. She didn't know Bill knew. She said it right before she got shot in the head with his gun, but that was a fleeting moment, you know. So Bill shoots her with a tranquilizer dart. And he starts talking about, you know, some of the... He starts talking about he has a really good superhero... speech about hidden identity and talking about Superman and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and then finally he's like, oh, you know, we have unfinished business. They both realize this is the end. One of them is going to die. So they sit there and they're like, okay, you know, they sit there and they kind of talk about, are they going to cross swords at midnight or at, you know, at noon kind of thing. She gives him the five point exploding palm heart technique, which I initially, like, it's the one technique that you know, Pai Mei never told anybody. He kept it for himself. And when she does it, you know, the five point, am I saying it right? Hold on. It's the 5 point palm exploding heart technique. Yes. Okay. Say that one time fast. So she does it to him before he, like, as he starts to draw on her. And the whole background of this is the person as they take their fifth step, they don't even know that what's happened. As they take their fifth step, they die. Kind of like me with high blood pressure. I'm going to take 5 steps and die. So he gets it. And he's like, Pai Mei showed you the technique. And she's like, of course he did. Meaning she has a way of charming people, even if they don't know they're being charmed by the lovely Beatrix. So he knows he's going to die. And they say their goodbyes. And it's very kind of tearful and heartfelt. And takes his final step and falls down on the ground. And then they kind of flash forward to Beatrix and her daughter. It's an overhead shot, like in this little thing, and she's happy, and she's crying. She's so happy, you know. And that's kind of, and that's the end. Her revenge has been gathered. They don't really go into anything else, you know. They left it open. This is obviously written for a third part, possible. You know, there was a couple steps along the way that left it wide open for the trilogy to be something. But I don't know if it needs it. I would definitely wouldn't mind a third one. I love these movies. I've professed my love for these movies at every step of the way. Kill Bill was one of the things after coming off of Reservoir Dogs, coming off of even True Romance, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction. You know, Tarantino was hot, and I loved the martial arts genre and the spaghetti western genre so much. I knew this would be a hit for me. You know. I don't know about anything after these. I don't dislike them. I loved Hateful Eight. I misspoke there. Hateful Eight was great, but that's really recent. You know, he did a whole bunch of them in between there. Jackie Brown, what was his other filmography? Oh my God, I can't even remember the Inglourious Bastards. I think I'm missing one or two. Doesn't matter. They weren't for me. They're fine movies. I know people love them. But they do, directors kind of get set in their ways, and after a while it becomes same thing, you know. And that's not necessarily bad, it just is. So, if you haven't seen these, and I can't imagine, if you're listening to Asian cult cinema, I can't imagine that you haven't watched the Kill Bill 1 and 2. And maybe you haven't. I would suggest you grab them up. I mean, I had them on DVD, and this is one of those things where I bought them on Blu-ray. You know, the Blu-ray purchase was like $8 or $9 for both of them, and I was like, I hate buying these kind of things because when you can quote line for line, it's so hard to buy them. But I finally did, and you know, I was like, I didn't mind it. So, but definitely loved the Kill Bills 1 and 2. I don't compare them one better than the other. It's one long story. It's this revenge tale, and it's really great. You know, so I would advise. If you haven't seen it, go out there and rent and, you know, buy them or rent it. And if you have seen it, well, maybe it's time to dust them off and watch them again, because really classic Asian cult cinema. That's it for this week. I know next week we are going to be back with a little bit more Asian-y and a little bit more culty. That's for sure. I know I have Corrado, the Hong Kong cat, is on the horizon, and also a weird one called Velvet Smooth or something like that. We have these queued up for the next couple weeks, and Dr. Morbius should be back, so it won't just you listening to me droning on. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you are all happy, healthy, and safe after Irma, and let's hope no more come through this area, because boy, water and gas, everyone, right? All right, make sure you spread the love, spread the word of the Asian Cult Cinema, and we'll see you next week.
Never have sex with you, ever. If you were the last man on Earth and I was the last woman on Earth, and the future of the human race depended on our having sex simply for procreation, I still would not have sex with you.
What's your point, Vanessa?